coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shot Ya? I don't know what you came to do, but I came to host this mug. It is a pleasure to be back in the studio. All the sound effects. Bring in the band. Light the fireworks, because it's on.
Somebody's leaving it on the floor.
This is all you're getting from me. I got no more. My man, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duraldi.
Call me it one last time, Ricardo.
El mero mero de Navidad no joda.
Thank you.
Coño su madre. Y huevuda. Put all the stink on it. Everybody's getting all the stink today.
Well, what's not good, speaking of Navidad, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries was showing Christmas movies on Thursday nights, and then they yanked them from the schedule with no advance notice. Suddenly, it's Psych reruns. Thank you for nothing, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries.
It's almost like it's not Christmas season.
What is that? What's going on?
Hallmark proper is showing them every Friday. And
I feel like they forgot. Like, they were like, oh, shit, we didn't, oh, my God.
We didn't turn off this spigot.
It's April. What were we doing?
They were my midweek crutch. Anyway.
Roll Psych.
What is good? is Fosse Verdon on FX.
Okay.
It is delicious and it is dishy and it is this amazing exploration of this very kind of volatile marriage between two incredible artists. But it's also just a look at stuff getting made. And, you know, like we talk a lot of times about what's great about watching TV shows and movies where people are good at their jobs. And so watching these people put together like the Who Gets the Pain number from Damn Yankees or the editing of Cabaret, like these really huge, complicated things and breaking them down step by step. And Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell are killing it. So if you're not watching Fosse Verdon, you're missing some awesome television.
I very much want to watch that show. How is it as far as like showing, like, do you get just like their career highlights, or do you get to see like actual like creative like process of it? I know, but I complain on here like about Straight Outta Compton, where I was like, I like the creative process. I don't need to see
both, because I mean it is their personal lives and stuff, but you do get these moments where, like, for example, Gwen Verdon starred in the Broadway version of Sweet Charity. Shirley MacLaine was in the movie. Was Gwen Verdon bitter? Maybe, but she still showed up on set and helped him direct the dancers. And, like, you know, you can tell that she is such a valuable sounding board for him. And if you've, you know, if you haven't seen All That Jazz, it'll make you want to watch All That Jazz again. And if you have, this kind of even sort of further elucidates what was going on between the two of them. It's really good television.
That's what's up. Shout out to my DJ, Elucidate. He's a good one. Ladies and gentlemen, you know her voice. You hear her on Max Fun. She's the host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast. It's the one and only Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf.
Oh, that sounds so good from your voice. I'm going to miss your DJ voice.
Sometimes it smells in for April.
That's awful DJ voice. That's awful.
Oh, shit.
April, what's good with you?
I've got two things. One, very quickly, I should tell people that I'm on the 1989 episode of this Nat Geo series about pop culture.
Oh,
so that's airing on Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Did you say it was another summer?
I don't know. This was a year ago. I think I wore a purple dress and I was really frazzled because I was late and then I had to get to something else after. So you will see me maybe remembering things on screen or possibly not, talking about a decade or a year rather in a decade.
Do you yawn during it?
She saves that for us.
Oh my! I'm sure that the producers cut out some of my yawns. There's a lot of staring in the distance that goes on. You see me? So there's that. But then I binged like almost all of Santa Clarita Diet this weekend.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
And I had watched the first episode like months ago, and I was like, the first episode has so much vomit in it, and that is when my one trigger. I love horror. I love all the blood and guts. For some reason, like excessive vomit, I just can't fucking do it. I can't.
No sallow for you.
So it took me so long to get over that hump, and then finally, once I did, I was just like, ah, the show is so fucking brilliant and so funny, and I know it's canceled now, so my only wish, I'm sending some good vibes out to the writers of this show, to the directors, everyone. I hope that you land somewhere great because this was so amazing.
Didn't it get canceled on a cliffhanger?
That's what I heard.
Yikes. Yeah, it did. So,
oh, it's like canceled, like they're not coming back.
They're not
coming
back.
Oh, I thought it was like there's one more season coming. Oh, it's RIP.
I know,
oh,
I know. So maybe, I hope that they give them some kind of wrap-up thing, maybe a movie or something if the fans ask enough. Mm-hmm. But all the people who are involved, I just hope that they move on to something even better. So there you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Film Fester programmer, producer, dope rhyme sayer, and the dope rhyme slayer. It's interchangeable, y'all. It's interchangeable. Treya Clark.
I don't know if you remember, you said that to me because in my first mic check before we had met,
yes.
I said, I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. And Ricky swooned. I did not know that that would be the way to his heart. That was just the thing I wanted to say into a microphone.
The hip-hop bond that we have and will always have is it's a beautiful thing.
As it's hip-hop, a beautiful thing. As hip-hop is.
Yes.
Weirdly, my What's Good also ties into TV. We had a previously undiscussed theme this week. Mm-hmm. Mine, what you do need to know about me for this story to make sense is I'm the bitch that at a company meeting for like a festival, when we're talking about who's going to be working where at the fest, whenever I hear the phrase, and X is going to man the table, I say, staff the table. And I will say it more and more condescendingly or snottily as I need to, because mm-hmm. I don't need gendering and dumb shit like that. Which means this weekend, when normally I have a group that I watch Game of Thrones with, and for different reasons we were scattered, so I was watching it alone on like a horrible compression on my laptop. It was already freaking out. And I was like, I felt like I was burning like 6,000 calories because I was so fucking tense the whole time. But then they get to a point. It's the episode, The Long Night, so it's the Battle of mm-hmm. Winterfell, and, you know, the undead, they're climbing, and so every time someone yells, man the walls, I just would whisper by myself, staff the walls. Just run, man the walls, staff the walls. Like, I couldn't stop.
I think you mean person the walls.
Person the walls. It happened like 12 times, and I was thankful. I'm like, I do miss having the group that I watch this with, but I'm also glad that only my cats heard that. So, staff the walls is my what's good.
Staff the walls, yo. Staff the walls. That's what's up. That's what's up.
Ricky, what's good?
Ricky, what's good?
Oh, God. No. Man, that was like a wave right there. What is good right now is, I mean, I've been championing this dude for a minute, and he put out a new album recently, and guess what? His shit is still hot. That new Anderson .Paak album, Ventura. Right? That Twilight? Oh! Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna play some right now.
I thought that I was just like, is this dude gonna be just like a short-lived wonder, but...
Ooh!
This shit is so hot! You guys! Come on.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, that's that. If you're ever going to listen to Anderson .Paak, it should be through an iPhone that's coming through a microphone, through other people's headphones. that's how you should listen to Anderson .Paak. But Anderson .Paak put out a new album. It's great. That song that you just heard right there is Twilight. It's just like George Clinton, Parliament, Funkadelic, Dr. Dre, disco sounding bangers. Like it's so dope. He's got that song is Twilight. He's got this song with Layla Hathaway, who is Donnie Hathaway's daughter. That's called let me find it real quick. It's called Reaching Too Much. Like, just it's like feel good music. Hey, I need like I can't afford breakfast right now, so what the fuck can I do to like get something good in me in the morning? Listen to some Anderson .Paak in the morning. That shit will treat you right. Treat you right. That's what's up. Treya, I'm glad you brought up Game of Thrones and the Battle of Winterfell, Long Night. What a week for nerds and dorks.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? Huh? We have made it to this point, we are at the end of Game of Thrones, but this is a movie podcast. We will be talking about the end of this. Well, this is, we found out, the penultimate
exactly
to Phase 3 of Marvel, of Marvel's Phase 3.
I don't know what any of that means.
I'm calling it a season finale. Let's face it.
Is that right?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think
for the ongoing TV show that is the Avengers.
Yeah. Disney figured out a way to get people to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
By making a TV show.
Making 3-hour episodes of a TV show.
It's like British TV. It's the same principle.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely. Today we are talking about Avengers Endgame. We're going to talk spoilers, right?
We have to.
Has anyone not seen the movie
by now?
That's
come
true.
On.
Everybody
it's
on
made
Earth.
$18 billion in Toledo. Like, there's nothing left.
Whatever planet is that Hawkeye and Scarlet.
Vormir.
Like they've seen the movie there.
Do you mean the Red Skull?
The Red Skull has seen the movie. He was sitting next to me.
The soul.
He took my ticket.
Resident of Vormir.
We are also going to be taking calls from the Who Shot Line. And as always, we will have staff picks at the end of the episode. But first, let's start off with some news, yo. This is our news segment. Who's hungry? Because it's time to eat a dick. Damn. Eat a dick, short for is this important? Do I care? Here's how it works. We're all going to read some news blurbs, headlines. Anyone can jump in by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? We're going to start off on a somber note here, unfortunately. RIP to the man. One of Los Angeles's great directors, John Singleton, passed away this week at the age of 51 after suffering a stroke 2 weeks ago. If you're not familiar with John Singleton, he's a native here in Los Angeles, grew up in South Central Los Angeles, he directed the film Boys in the Hood. Boys in the Hood, he was the youngest director to ever be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Director, the first African-American to be nominated for Best Director in the Oscar category. He also went on to direct Poetic Justice. That's a movie we've discussed here. With Morgan Rhodes from the Heat Rocks podcast. He also went on to direct Higher Learning, Rosewood, Baby Boy, Too Fast, Too Furious, Shaft, Four Brothers. He is the executive producer on Snowfall, which is a hit on FX right now. He directed a couple of episodes, I believe, of American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson. The man has had a career. And not just, I've seen, I don't know if you all have noticed this, I've seen a lot of stories that are just kind of referring to him as a little bit of like a hood director. Mm-hmm. And he actually has like, he dipped his toes in all kinds of genres. But Boys in the Hood is definitely like the movie that we think of when we think of John Singleton. So pouring some out for him. Is this important? Do you all care? What are your thoughts on John Singleton?
I mean, it is a sad thing to talk about. He was so young. He was 51.
51,
yeah.
And, I mean, adding to that, apparently he died of complications from hypertension, which affects black men in a disproportionately large faction, which seems cruel. But I was glad Morgan Rhodes was on and we talked about Poetic Justice, so I recently rewatched that when that happened. And in revisiting that, I then actually went back and watched Higher Learning again. Mm. And he was an intuitive filmmaker. And there were things Morgan brought up and a lot of people, like you're saying, the idea of him being pigeoned into just being representative of black urban storytelling, but then it went further than that. Like Rosewood was a period piece, right?
Mm-hmm. An ambitious epic, and I think one of those movies where you're like, it's kind of amazing that it got made because there's been such an aversion to that kind of film, to a historical black-centric, black POV kind of saga. That's usually not the voice we get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we also talked about All Eyes on Me in this podcast a long time ago. And remember, that was a project that he walked away from because they would not allow him to tell the story of Tupac with honesty. Mm-hmm. And instead, we got what we got that we reviewed on the show.
Well, you don't need to put your eyes on that movie, is what we're saying.
No, John Singleton was right.
No eyes on that movie.
No, no eyes on me.
Well, that was happy talk, huh?
Woo!
Well, this is not going to maybe lift the room
make you feel better.
That much, but here we go. At the annual Chaplin Gala held by the Film Society of Lincoln Center, which dropped that from the name. They're now, was it Film at Lincoln Center?
Just Film At, yeah.
Film at Lincoln Center. Director Dee Rees delivered a speech that shed light on some discriminatory theater practices that have kept black people from fully participating in the movie theater-going experience. Rees, who directed Mudbound and Pariah, touched upon her grandparents and father not being able to see classic films back in the 1940s and 60s, respectively, but she also touched upon more recent practices that have shut out black audiences. Quote, you'd go and pay for a ticket to see Dead Presidents, and you'd get a ticket that says drama instead. You'd ask to go see Rosewood, and you'd be told, we're sorry, we're all sold out. You'd buy a ticket to another movie at the same time and see the supposedly sold-out theater was half empty. Oh. They would depress box office numbers for black cast films, which fueled the falsehood that black films don't sell. She even discussed how she and her wife were randomly selected for a bag check at a screening of Straight Outta Compton. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes. Yep. In another bummer way, I will say, so... In part, and this is going to be a real clumsy metaphor, but when I was reading about this, and I've, you know, kind of thought about it, but not specifically, it actually reminded me of the idea of black people being able to swim or not, and culturally what that's meant in terms of we don't see a lot of black swimmers, so there's an assumption that black people can't swim. And so the idea of her talking to a father, a grandfather who weren't able to go to movies or see movies, like, oh, black people don't go to the movies, so they don't like movies. Like that whole causation thing, that's such a falseness to it and how pervasive it can be.
It has nothing to do with the fact that all the theaters in town are white only.
Yes, exactly. Right. I will say, I 100% believe her, and also cluelessly did not know the idea of going into a theater and or trying to get a ticket for something and being told it was sold out. And it really wasn't. I mean, it's...
I would love to hear other people's experiences about that. Because if she's saying that, I mean, I would assume that there's more. It can't just be...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
Anecdotal.
Absolutely.
And there's got to be... There's an interesting way to explore... I don't know if it's an article, a documentary, some kind of piece. But I think those things tie together so much when we talk about what we're looking for in... filmmakers that are coming up, like the Dee Reeses or John Singletons, like people who are going and trying to tell their story, and that it's that idea of you don't even typically know half the things they battled to get to where they are if you didn't have to go through them.
Right.
It's also like Ava DuVernay talking about the fact that most theaters aren't even in black neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Mm. Like they're just not there, you know? Like there's, like, we've got the Magic Johnson Theater here that's doing a lot of heavy work. I would think,
and that was that was the principle behind that theater chain in the first place.
Exactly,
was to put theaters in those sort of redlined areas that had been, you know, ignored.
Yeah, but it's still like a separate world, you know, like it's still segregated. It's so fucked. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah,
that's why I'm making a documentary called "Crackers Be Crackers."
I'm going to make sure these stories get told.
I'm available to be a cracker extra. That's just an outstanding offer for anyone.
We'll cracker for
you. This is a real sexy one, you guys. Oh. How Disney will handle Fox Archive for classic movie bookings? So we've discussed it a little bit. Disney recently absorbed all of Fox Studios' film library. And one of the results of that is there's now a lot of repertory movie theaters that screen classic films who have had some concern over it. Disney, unlike other studios, does not frequently release their back catalog for classic screenings. That's also true for their DVD releases if you're someone with children that have ever tried to...
Exactly. Some scary fucking shit, you know?
Can a girl just watch Black Stallion?
Come on now.
However, there is some good news, as it appears they are going to let Fox titles be re-released, with the exception that Fox will no longer allow weekday matinees aimed at mainly kids audiences who remain a mainstay for Disney first-run releases. Role-specific. We'll see if that sticks. They have a history of changing their mind. A few years back, they began allowing some of their back catalog to screen in ancillary markets, but then the practice abruptly ended when one single exhibitor showed a different movie in a time slot meant for a classic Disney film. Is this important? Do you care?
Fuck Disney.
Oh, Lordy.
Fuck Disney. Seriously.
Well, I mean, I have to say, like, I have encountered this problem with different studios at different times. Disney is a big pain in the ass. Like, you can't book a classic, any classic Disney kids film, like even for a film festival, on the same weekend that a new Disney kid film is opening.
What?
Because they in no way want to compete with themselves. But sadly, they're not alone in this because, like, I remember whoever was, I guess, Sony, I guess, whoever was running the Bond catalog, I wanted to book something for a rep series I did in Dallas in the weeks leading up to a new Bond movie coming out, you know, which I'm thinking, oh, well, that's going to stoke interest and da-da-da. And they were like, oh, no, because that's going to, you know, like my showing Goldfinger is going to get people to not buy tickets to, you know, whatever the hell was about to open.
Fucking idiots.
The state of repertory in this country, granted, the repertory itself is a far shrunken thing than it used to be. Mm-hmm. In the pre-VHS days, there was a thriving rep circuit on college campuses and in rep houses, and now it's very few and far between, and what's left of the marketplace sadly has to grapple with this kind of crap all the time. So I hope that Disney does not jinx up the Fox library too much. That's all I'm saying.
Especially one of the ones they pointed out that could be affected is Rocky Horror Picture Show is a Fox title that's now in their library. And that, I mean, if you think of any art house cinema in your town,
it
probably
shows
it on the weekend. Like, I went to those. It's become a sort of rite of passage.
Yeah.
And a moneymaker, I'm assuming, for those independently owned theaters. So
Disney deprives people of culture.
They really do.
Whoa.
Put it on your shirt, man. I'm going to make that
fight
for you.
Fight the power.
That's what's up.
I know that they're financing all of this shit. They're doing a bunch of stuff, but I think that they're, like, the top people there, not good people. Just not good people.
That's what I'm talking about, yo. April Wolf, the Chuck D of this bitch.
Yeah,
it's important, and she cares.
Good luck with that Frozen 3
the
script.
Chuck D! I know.
We're going to take a break, y'all. We'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
What are you laughing at, James?
I'm laughing at you.
What?
And me too.
Huh?
Our podcast, Minority Corner, silly.
Oh, the one where we talk about topics that cover the queer community, race, feminism, and good old pop culture?
Yep, that's it. Oh, girl, we are so funny. I was just thinking about something we did.
Wait. Are you listening to me or...
Me.
Both.
Minority Corner.
Every Friday. Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I am your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
I want to apologize to our Disney overlords real quick, if I may. Shit got real weird when we went away there for a second. We heard voices from the skies.
Look, we're spending the next segment kissing your ass.
That's true.
Are we, though?
Well, maybe not.
Oh, damn.
Maybe not.
Oh, I like this. Okay, all
right. We are.
We are going to talk about Avengers Endgame. There will be spoilers, y'all. There will be spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, I don't know what you're doing with yourself, but there are going to be spoilers here. So if you haven't watched the movie, push pause, go see the movie, come back and listen to us. We will be talking about Avengers Endgame, and we're going to start that right now with Alonzo Duraldi. Can you give us a synopsis of every single Marvel movie since 2008?
Okay, so Carol Danvers crashes into a Blockbuster Video. No. Sorry, that's after Captain America. Anyway, all right. So we pick up where we left off. The snap, or as NPR's Glenn Weldon continually insists that we call it, the snapshot has happened.
Big fan of that.
Everybody's gone. And so the remaining heroes are trying to figure out how to undo it. They track down Thanos. He has already destroyed the Infinity Stones, so ha-ha. Thor beheads him anyway. Everyone's real sad. Then we jump ahead 5 years, which is kind of a bold move. And for a while there, it's like an episode of The Leftovers, which I was digging, where everybody's really kind of morose and trying to figure out what to do. And, Of course, the Natasha is still holding things together because, you know, the emotional labor of women. Nobody else can be bothered. It's Ryan, keep an eye on things. But luckily, a random rat brings Ant-Man back from being tiny, and he discovers that you can travel through time at a really tiny subatomic. I'm not going into all this.
No,
this is a 3-hour tour. Anyway, they go to the place and they get the thing and they reassemble the stones and they fight Thanos and they kick his ass, and then Iron Man dies anyway.
There you go. And then we cry. And I was like, I can't believe they pulled it off.
And then Captain America somehow rewrites the entire history of the 20th century without anyone noticing. And many other time travel things that I'm like, what? But we'll get into that.
When I've seen, like, people have been like, oh, do I need to watch the other movies to, like, get this one? No.
Oh,
you need to know those are the good guys. And at this point, those are the good
you
guys.
You should at least
those
see
are the bad guys.
No.
I mean, have you seen all of them, though?
I have.
Okay, because I have not, and you definitely need to see all
of them. Like Black Panther, Captain Marvel, you can walk into and not have the whole thing. You better have your goddamn mythos down for this one.
You knew what you could tell
what you wanted to happen, what was supposed to happen. The good guys had to win, right?
Well, there's also just no emotional resonance if you don't understand why. Fucking Black Widow, I don't know what her deal is. I don't know why she's trying to shoot a ghost either, like whatever the fuck that thing is. I don't understand. Like, she pulls out her gun, they meet a ghost on a mountaintop. And I'm like, what is happening? Why are they fighting?
Oh, the Red Skull?
They need to get the stone. Explained in the movie.
I think you need to see Infinity War. Because
I saw Infinity War.
But you have to see both Guardians movies. You have to see, like, there's a lot of plot where you're otherwise going to be like, where are we?
It's fruitless having a discussion if you need to. I mean, to me, if you're seeing Endgame, you probably have seen a number of these.
I'm just saying, though, like, there have been reviews of these for certain movies. Like I said, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, where I'm like, first Guardians. Doesn't matter if you've seen the other ones. If you've been keeping up, you know, yeah, there'll be little shout-outs or things you'll get. But for the most part, you can come in cold. This one, at least, like, read the cliff notes. Like, you've got to know a lot.
That's why
this.
I resent this movie, though, because it's not a movie. It's TV. I don't know how we're reviewing it as a movie when you need to have seen. It's like reviewing the end of the last episode of Game of Thrones after not having seen it. It's just like it can't stand
but
alone.
But I've seen other films where I need to see a film before it. Like, there's been other sequels.
20
I've
films
needed
before
to see.
It, though.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I know people who only saw Infinity War and were able to keep up with this.
No, I mean, I can keep up, but the emotional resonance. Gone. I don't understand why Black Widow is a character.
No, if you don't,
I don't know why she's friends with anyone, what her deal is.
100%. 100%.
They do drop her romance with the Hulk also, by the way.
That was dropped in the last... That was closed to me. It was.
She had a romance with the Hulk.
The door for that was closed, I think, in Ultron when they had the discussion in the farmhouse. Like, I thought that ran its course.
Okay.
Also, when he decided to live as Professor Hulk, that also, to me, was very clear. Like,
that's great.
Oh, you and me... He made me very uncomfortable.
He's living like his
Professor
midlife
Hulk
crisis.
And Fat Thor. I'm down for either.
Yes, Alonso, we are same paging on that one. Big time. I had, because I have seen all of these, man, I cried like 6 times during this. I was also in the throes of some very particularly strong PMS, but I still credit the filmmaking for it. And then I stood and, like, dissected it.
PMS
with...
was a superhero in, like, one of the earlier movies.
It's
April,
a division of
so,
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Just so you know what's going on.
But, you know, actually the thing that was most surprising to me about this was how much I was surprised. We've spent so much time, like, the Marvel fans have spent a lot of time since Infinity War trying to guess ahead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, so what are they going to do? Clearly, you know... Doctor Strange said there's 14 million things and there's only one way out of this and we're in Endgame now. So, and the whole time I was assuming it just meant all going back to where that all happened in Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute the minute it went to 5 years later, I gasped.
Yeah,
I was like,
yes.
Wait, what? And then seeing the psychological and the emotional toll on all of the Avengers and the people in their lives of what it's meant to have been, I was like, that is huge. Like, it was such a nice, to me, even sophisticated storytelling of having it be more than just.
Yeah, because the leftovers is only 2% of humanity disappears. This is 50.
Yeah. And yeah. April, you're very right as far as like Marvel has kind of like figured out the code into like how to make the TV experience a cinematic experience. Because, I mean, I thought of The Leftovers while we were watching this. I thought of Battlestar Galactica while we were watching this. In, I think it's the second season of Battlestar Galactica, there's a huge time jump that just comes out of nowhere and you go, oh, we're here now. Okay.
I highly recommend Matt Zoller-Seitz wrote a piece for RogerEbert.com about Endgame and about Game of Thrones and about how basically, and it's not an alarmist piece, it's just kind of like, well, this is where we are now, where basically this is the future. This is the idea of movies just being pieces of larger puzzles as opposed to being like standalone events is just going to be a thing that happens more and more because that's what sells and that's what you get audiences interested in and sort of sucked into.
Yeah.
I have to say,
I mean, like, I know you guys are talking about like the 5 years later and makes you kind of gasp, but like, I assumed it would go to later. Like, I guess I just didn't.
You assumed what? I'm sorry.
I would assume that it would go to like 5 years later from the trailers or whatever. I was just like, yeah, I mean, it's like the future. They're dealing with it. I didn't feel any emotional connection to it, whatever.
Okay.
I'm sad for you.
No, I mean, it's again, like, I just don't understand. And there's just certain people, like characters who would come in where I just don't, like, I don't know what Elizabeth Olsen's character's name is, but I'm assuming it's Red Widow.
Because she's Scarlet Witch.
No, she is Red Widow.
April came.
Well, she has because she was widowed in the last one.
I'm telling you, I saw that movie. She is Red Widow because Scarlet Witch. I just don't understand what that means.
Now, when you say like
telekinetic power
is her mutant,
were you still able to like enjoy Endgame, or were you just like, I haven't seen the other ones, fuck it, I'm out?
It didn't have the
emotional impact, but did it have the entertainment
impact?
Was it
visceral in any way?
It was like I had my screenwriting brain on and I was just like, oh, that's clever. So it was 3 hours of me going, oh, that's clever. And
it's a very clever movie.
It really is. Like, kudos to the Russos for crafting a very clever, like,
oh, they didn't write it though.
Oh, they didn't? Who wrote it?
Marcus McFeely?
Yeah.
McFeely's then. Give it all to them. They clearly did a good job with breaking it, but they broke it like a TV episode. So yeah, it has the same structure.
I found and that I like, because I agree in the sense of like a TV episode with the six acts or whatever, but it actually, it followed opera structure really well. There's this whole thing with overture at the beginning, and they do it both sonically but also narratively, and the idea of, you know how they space out the battle sequences or the fight sequences, and it's like the idea of having, you'll have a tenor do something or then a baritone come in, and then it's, to me, the pacing of it seemed very operatic.
It's also a lot of comic book structure, because like comics a lot of times will do what they call their annual issue, and it'll be like a double size, and they'll bring in guests and other things, or they'll assemble the entire Justice League or Avengers or whatever. And more often than not, because you're dealing with more characters than usual in a story, it's everybody gets together, then everybody has to break up into teams and go dash in a million directions to do a thing, and then everybody gets back together again for the big battle and a big two-page splash page.
The final battle was the most perfect splash page.
And I have to say, I did love, because there has been, you know, especially after all the Captain Marvel sort of toxic fanboy bullshit on Twitter, I loved that moment where, like, Peter Parker, like, Spider-Man can't go on, but Captain Marvel shows up. And Valkyrie shows up, and Pepper, and, you know, and Nebula, and, like, all these characters, like, wham, bam, 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 like, 20 women in a row, and I'm like, yes.
Oh, yeah. And I hated it so much. I hated it.
Really?
I was just like, fuck, this is what we get? Like, it just, it felt so inorganic. It was just like, here you go, ladies, you know, like, it felt so pandering to me.
Really?
And it didn't, because, like, where were the dudes? What happened to them?
The
like,
reason,
where,
that's we're why fighting. I liked it. Inga,
we're doing stuff.
Inga wrote
falling
an article
behind,
about it.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Inga wrote an article about it, and I agreed with a lot of it, but I didn't feel that moment was pandering because There was something about the framing of it. It was acknowledged. It was super low on the left. So there were like five or six of them up before I realized they were all women. And that's why I appreciate it. I thought they were like low key lining up the women. And then you just sort of noticed at a certain point. And by that point, Captain Marvel had already taken the gauntlet and gone with it rather than. If they had been front of screen, they could have been framed differently.
If they like all walked
it.
Together in a row toward the
but
camera
slow
or something.
Motion.
But like
yes.
How they ended up was just like we can, you know, it was just like, it felt like I was, I don't like it.
They had a smile.
It was like anti-power. It was like so like 90s girl power faux corporatism feminism to me that I just shook my head.
If you start shitting on the Spice Girls,
mad.
I'm leaving.
Infinity War had a small moment like that too, where Okoye and the Scarlet Witch was being attached, and then Okoye and Black Widow come and like so they had.
Oh right,
done
well,
a small...
they're fighting Carrie Coon, who's
yeah,
also
exactly.
Yeah,
totally,
for me, this felt like an evolution of that moment, and then. Just an evolution of, because I went back and watched the first Avengers movie as well, again, recently, which at the time when I saw it in, you know, opening
the
night
of
in
New
theater,
York one.
I was like, oh, the world, everybody was going crazy. But while I was watching, I was like, let's go get to it. But yes, you're exactly right, Drea. There's a shot in New York where it's like the Avengers have formed and where the camera is following them going to, and they're all having their own little iconic moment. And what I loved when I saw all the female superheroes get together is like, okay, cool. We have the shot where they're all like forming together in their lineup. And now we're actually getting to see them do something as well. It's not just like, we're here, ladies. Great.
Pose.
Awesome. And then like now cut back to Incredible Hulk. It was like, no, now we're going to fucking follow her on her flying horse and see her do some shit. Like, I just like that we didn't just get the rah-rah moment. It was like, now let's see them
like a challenge that they do need to come up to themselves because the women have been sorely underutilized.
Absolutely.
So for me, it was this thing of like, great, now that you've acknowledged you have this, you know...
Deep bench
of characters, please do something with them. And so them ending it with like Valkyrie assuming leadership roles of the Asgardians, like things like that. I'm like, okay... Keep
more,
doing
please.
Those things to just not just that you have them or like even having Wasp there like she's already she's the only one that's so far been in the title of one of these movies, you know.
Yeah, she, I just Captain think Marvel. That we're gonna look back on that scene in this movie and we're gonna be like, oh.
I mean,
you know what I say?
I would like it if Marvel movies evolved to a point where it will seem extraneous. But given, I think in a way, it sort of felt like an acknowledgement of like, oh yeah, we've got all these kick-ass characters, and we have not put them as front and center as we should. But it's also a reminder of we have all these kick-ass characters, and kick-ass they do.
And then we're gonna stop right there, yo. But before we do. Should the audience out there, I feel like I don't even know who we're asking if they should.
Because they've already
screened
it. It truly does not matter what we say.
To be fair, I don't think it ever does.
Hey, there you go. Honesty.
So screen it, stream it, or skip it. Alonzo.
Oh, God. I mean, screen it because it is just... so much. It's so much of all the things, and the last 30 minutes crams so many characters into the screen that you really, it's gonna lose a little something at home, I think, unless you've got just an incredibly large room built around your incredibly large television set. So yeah, screen it.
Definitely screen it. It was rewarding for me as a fan, but also as someone who loves visual storytelling. Did I mention I cried, you guys? Did I tell you about my PMS, most importantly?
Isn't that a Morrissey line? Did I mention that I cried?
Did I mention that I cried? Staff the wall. Yeah, screen it.
April.
It doesn't matter what I say.
It does matter.
Oh my God, please say skip it.
Come on.
Please say skip it. It does matter.
I don't know, just go fucking see it, I guess.
Do you want people to see it?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess screen it. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Wow. I thought you had principles.
I
thought you stood for something.
She spent a whole 30 minutes explaining why she wasn't satisfied with it. That counts.
Yeah, I mean, like, but are there people like me out there who don't know or care?
100%
There are,
absolutely.
And they're glad to hear you.
Yes.
Well, be their then, champion.
Well, then, you know, stream it when you're, like, sick, I think. That it's to me, it seems
on
like a
Disney
good movie.
Plus.
Yeah, it seems like a good movie to stream
when you
you're
have a fever.
Sick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you're just like, I don't care what it is. Dazzle me. Yeah. You know? Yep. Like, I just don't care.
Dance,
yeah.
monkey.
Yeah, dance, yeah. Disney, dance. Do my bidding.
Ricky. What would you say?
You know, as I feel like there's the movie-going experience, which I love. I love going to the movies, and I love going on opening nights. And then there's what I noticed when I saw this movie opening night at the Vista. Shout out to the Vista, my favorite theater in L.A. And the Marvel movie-going experience from 2008, being inside a theater with people who not only love movies, but loved all of these movies. And I'll say probably not since I was a kid at, like, Return of the Jedi.
It was very Star
have
Wars.
I heard people, like, just, like, invested. And you could feel, like, the energy in there. And not just because it was... It was all of the things. It was because it was this movie, because it was... this kind of like, I guess this is what everybody's doing tonight and I'm supposed to see this movie. Like, that energy was there. When Iron Man dies, the theater was fucking dead quiet. And then one kid, like, I felt bad for him because I was like, life just hit you, son.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Iron Man dies and he goes, no, no,
oh.
no, three no's. Oh. And it was just like.
That might make me cry. Iron Man dying didn't make me cry, but that
but
child.
The kid,
might
yeah.
make me cry.
I mean,
it was just kind of like. Oh, yeah, like, oh, yeah, yeah, kid, that's fucked up. That's fucked up. But also, this is awesome. You know, it's like, I would say screen it as soon as you can to still kind of, like, get that energy of watching these movies with the crowd because it's super fun. And if not, stream it when you get to it because it's still just a fun spectacle to watch. And if you're an outsider and you just want to know what the fuck everybody was going crazy about, when you have time, sit down for 3 hours and 2 minutes and enjoy Avengers Endgame, yo. That's what's up. All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take a call from the Who Shot Line. But before we do that, how about we listen to something from another Max Fun show?
Thanks so much to the over 28,000 members who joined or upgraded during the 2019 Max Fun Drive and to all of our monthly members.
To celebrate hitting our goal this year, we're putting the 2019 Max Fun Drive pins on sale for all $10 and up monthly members.
As in past years, you'll be able to get some pins and support a great cause at the same time. The proceeds from this year's sale will support the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates Association.
National CASA does amazing work for children and youth through a national network of 950 member programs. We are proud to be able to support them.
The pin sale will run from April 29th until May 10th. And if you're a $10 and up monthly member, your personalized code is waiting in your inbox right now. For more details, you can head over to MaximumFun.org/pins.
And once again,
thank you.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
April Wolf.
All right, let's get to it, y'all. Thank you to everybody who calls into the Who Shot Line. We have three calls that we're going to listen to. The first one is from Michael in Atlanta. Talk to us, Michael.
Hey, gang. This is Micah from Atlanta. And since you're talking about Avengers Endgame, and spoiler alert, in the film there are cameos from Rene Russo, Robert Redford, and more veteran actors. My question is, do you think that Marvel does a better job at giving veteran actors these roles in huge blockbusters than DC does with actors such as Kevin Costner, Russell Crowe, Robin Wright, etc.? Thanks. Good to meet you, Ricky. Bye.
Thank you for that question, Michael. That's a fantastic question. Since I am one of the few people who fucking stands for DC, I'll say the thing that's always going to hurt DC is that they kept making these missteps from the get-go, so we don't get to see, like, what really could have happened with, you know, with the Kevin Costner, you know, Pa Kent trajectory. Mm. Same thing with Russell Crowe with it, you know, with where those movies would have gone. So I feel like DC was giving them the opportunities. It's just the movies
the scripts weren't.
Yeah, it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And Marvel.
Robin Wright got something, though, yes. At least, because that seemed like a newer.
Absolutely. 100%.
I did like Holly Hunter in Batman v Superman saying, you can take a jar of piss and label it Granny's Peach Tea.
That was great.
Solid Holly Hunter. Solid Holly Hunter. What do you all think?
It's funny to me because Robert Redford, who's in his 80s, I think it was a very different stage of his career than Robin Wright. So those are tricky, just a little bit. And it might be just the Marvel worlds are broader now so that you have the resources to have, like I said, Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas show up with no lines at all in Endgame. I think that they all do a good job. I've actually been more surprised by some of the DC, like Nicole Kidman playing an action role.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like an action role as a webbed creature of the sea.
Queen of the sea.
Right? Like that was a, oh, hey, this is going on. And I find some of the DC ones to be more surprising choices that way.
Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. I mean,
right?
You just weren't expecting a black Perry White.
And he's
Perry
a perfect
White.
Perry White.
And he was great. Yeah. As soon as you saw it, you went, yep, yeah. Thank you. April, what's your favorite DC? No, I'm kidding.
Pass.
All right, our next question comes from Dan in Portland. Let's hear from Dan.
Hello, my beautiful people. This is Dan from Portland. April, Ingu, Drea. Take a seat. This one's for Ricky. Ricky, why do you always do such dope shit, Ricky?
Yeah.
Ricky, you already know about this. But I'm excited that the RZA is coming around live from the 36th Chamber. I'm going to get my chance to see him in Portland. And I hope that you are going to see him in L.A.
You know I am.
I have no question. I just wanted to get Ricky hyped and hear his reaction, and I hope it's going to be loud and exciting and enthusiastic, because that's what I love about Ricky. Love to all you guys. Bye now.
My man, you know I'm going to go see the Wu-Tang Clan in June, son. You know I am. It's going to be the Wu-Tang Clan. De La Soul's on that bitch. Public Enemy is doing Fear of a Black Planet, the whole album. De La Soul is doing 3 Feet High and Rising, that whole album. The Far Side is going to be there. I assume they're going to be doing Bizarre Ride to the Far Side. But if not, if they do Lab Cabin California, I'm going to throw my panties on the stage. Shit's going to be hot. It is going to be amazing. If you haven't already, Dan, I'm not even a fan of Jimmy Fallon's show, but Wu-Tang was on there last week, and they did Triumph, and Jimmy Fallon comes out on stage and shakes all of their hands like I would come out on stage and kiss all of their feet. Like, it was one time where I was like, Jimmy, you get it.
Yeah.
You know what's going on right there. So, yeah, Dan, holler at me after you see that show, and we'll exchange Wu-Tang pleasantries. That's what's up. My man. Our final call comes to us from Erica in Atlanta. Erica, what do you have to say?
Hey, this is Erica from Atlanta. I'm going on vacation in May, and my trip includes a stop in Los Angeles. So I want to know, what are your favorite movies about LA? Thanks.
Oh, man, I needed time to prep this one. Casey.
We were told to keep it short.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Always Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay,
sure.
Ooh,
okay.
That's an easy
one. In a double feature with Chinatown, because they're the same story.
Yeah. Roger Rabbit is the real one.
Yes. Steve Martin's LA,
LA story.
For sure.
Great, yes.
God.
Sandy, Big A. Little A, or big ass little A,
capital D,
capital
little
D,
and a
star at the end.
I don't love this movie the way a lot of people do, but I do appreciate its inherent L.A.-ness, certainly an L.A. of a specific period, and that would be Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In a very similar capacity, I would say Clueless.
Oh, yes,
right,
for sure.
Right after Altman, I would like to follow that with Clueless.
Yes.
And Fast Times at Ridgemont High, for that matter, if we're going to include The Valley, and why not?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say a Michael Mann film, but I'm not going to go with the obvious one. I'm going to go with Collateral this time around, because in Collateral, they actually, part of the movie, part of the thing in that movie is that they have to go to different parts of L.A. And also, we were literally just talking about John Singleton,
yep.
So I would say watch Boys in the Hood.
There you go.
You know, that's a great one. Thank you to everybody who has called in. There's still some that we haven't gotten through, but those calls will be played on the air in future episodes. Please keep continuing to call in the Who Shot line. Keep your questions to under a minute, because that will guarantee that they get played on the air. The Who Shot line, if you want to call us here, it is at WSY-803-1664. Thank you to everybody who called in. Thank you, my man Dan, with the Wu-Tang question. That made me feel very happy. All right, y'all, before we go, staff picks. Everybody's looking at the phone, looking for all their staff picks.
I wrote it down.
For their staff picks.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Oh, I heard Drea has it. Okay, so we're going to start with Drea Clark.
This was another Sundance film from this year, and it is coming out on Netflix this week. So it will be out when this comes out, and it is called Knock Down the House. It is a film by a director named Rachel Lears, who last in 2016 put out a call to find four or a handful of women who were going to be running for the Democratic Party Congress and who had not been involved in politics but found themselves recently lit up from within and inspired. And much like a lot of their campaigns, this film was made from crowdsourcing, and I think the budget was like under $50,000, and it looks fantastic. And one of the four subjects she followed was Ms. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And so you're seeing the four different women in their campaign process and behind the scenes and how they're meeting people, and the idea of looking at politics as a social service that you're finding a calling to and wanting to activate change in a very meaningful way on a very individual personal level. And it's inspiring and exciting and infuriating. And it's really beautifully done. It won both the audience and the jury, I think, at Sundance. It did really well. And it'll be on Netflix, Knock Down the House.
Okay. That's what's up, yo. Alonzo, what do you got for the people?
So Emma Thompson is going to be hosting the next to last Saturday Night Live of the season.
Oh, shit.
Which I think is delicious, because she actually got her start doing TV comedy in the UK. She had a show called Emma. We think of her as like this serioso, you know, sort of dramatic actress, which she is. But she came
I think of her as a playwright.
How nice for you.
Yes!
Is she a playwright or a screenwriter?
Well, she's a screenwriter, but she's written some
Anyway.
You know she's in the next Marvel movie, right?
She's in Men in Black.
That look you gave me right there was deserved.
Anyway, just as a what the hell, why not? It's probably been a while since you've watched it, or maybe you've never seen it, but on Netflix, they're screening Howard's End. And she gives a great lead performance. It's one of my favorite of the many Merchant Ivory, Ruth Prower Javala collaborations. It's a really great movie. And it, even if you think, ugh, white people in, you know, Etonian collars and, you know,
always
period piece. Yes, Ricardo, looking at you.
I'm going to tell you, Ricky.
Specifically for Ricky.
You should see Howard's End, because it's all about how rich people are fucking assholes.
Oh, Ricky's never once thought of Etonian collars. I will say that.
That's what I planted the seed.
Does FUBU make those?
Who makes those? Where can I get one of those?
For us, by us.
April, chiyonin ass. Talk to your boy.
Okay, so a movie that I gave a mixed review to, but I still think that you should see it, called Be Natural. The story of Alice Guy Blachet, one of the first filmmakers ever, but also obviously one of the first female filmmakers, who was extremely prolific and pioneered so much of our film industry, and yet no one really knew her name until very recently. And the documentary itself has some formal, like structural issues, some weird missteps and things. They're trying to do a lot of stuff, appeal to a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is that their research is phenomenal. They have a lot of amazing information. There's certain things where they're really firing. Jodie Foster does this narration for it. And I love her narration. There's like a lot of, sometimes, you know, you can just get like a hit or miss, like, why did they get that person? But you just feel like she connects to the material. So she's also the executive producer. And A lot of the talking head interviews that they do are just kind of dumb and they're not necessary. But the information that you get about this woman and what she did, and also the classic films, the silent film clips that you get from her movies, it's phenomenal. You're like, oh my God, this was the first comedy director and she's a fucking woman. And she's like, she's doing some hilarious gender bending, strange things back in 1910 and before. You know, it's insane. I can't believe that, more people don't know about her. So be natural.
All right. And where is that available at?
It has been in theaters, but I think it's also going to be on VOD.
Okay.
So check it out. That's look for
up.
It.
That's what's up, yo. That's what's up. Oh, I haven't been here in a minute, and I've been watching a lot of movies. So I'm just going to fucking rattle off movies I've seen I've seen before. I just watched Sneakers again, yo. Sneakers. God damn, that movie's still good.
How does the tech hold up?
C-Tech Astronomy. Too many secrets. Shout out to my girl, Mary McDonald, Annette. I watched Night of the Hunter for the first time.
Yes! Oh,
wow. Just a real creepy fucking movie. Really great.
And a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it is. They should make them like that, dog. They should make them like that. Did I watch Mission Impossible Rogue Nation again? You know I did. Interview with the Vampire. Watch that again. Still great. Strangers on a Train.
Ooh.
Yes. Big fan of that one.
Love it.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Went back and watched that mug.
Which
Solid.
One?
The 70s one.
Good.
Very gelatinous soundtrack.
It is.
All About Eve. Never seen that before.
Ricardo. Oh, it's so funny.
Fantastic. And John Wick Chapter 2.
You gotta get ready because, for John Wick 3.
Yeah, because Parabellum is on the way. So all those movies, they're all available on Amazon Prime or on YouTube. I mean, you can just watch
Dude,
movies.
They're on there.
Anywhere
Strangers
now.
On a Train is on Netflix for sure, because I just watched that again.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah. Strangers on a Train, All About Eve, and Night of the Hunter. As far as, like, older movies that I have a dope-ass girlfriend right now, and she's like, you got to watch it. Hey, yeah, when you're done watching that, watch these two.
God, she's marrying her.
She knows her shit.
And those are really great. They blew me away. Shout out to everybody who leaves us 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read them here. First one is from Cheeks 8683. They say, I'm smiling as I write this review because I just listened to an episode where the question of if black people listen to this podcast was asked. Yes, we do, and here I am. And yes, your black card can be revoked if you haven't seen staples in the black cinespace, such as The Color Purple, Purple Rain, Coming to America, and Love and Basketball. I enjoy the weekly discussions, and it makes me wish that I had a real community of movie nerds in my hometown to discuss why Gloria Swanson was robbed of her Oscar for Sunset Boulevard. Grace Kelly could never. Who shot ya is the highlight of my week.
Thank you, Cheeks. But Grace Kelly actually stole Judy Garland's Oscar.
Okay.
Judy Holliday stole Gloria Swanson's Oscar.
Boom. El mero mero coming through with that knowledge.
Oh, my God.
That knowledge.
Yeah, you can't stop him.
Try though you might.
You guys are great. I love you very much.
We love you,
Ricardo.
Ricky.
I love you very much.
Ricky,
I want you to know that I would owe my captain, the shit out of this chair right now if this little cubicle had like 5 square feet more to it.
You would hit your head on the ceiling.
I would,
for
yes.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a small box that we are in. I don't know that you guys know what this looks like.
Yeah. But in my heart, I am on my chair. Oh, captain, my captain.
Thank you for letting us into your playground.
No, thank you for, putting the show together with Laura back there. We talked about it with Casey, April coming in. There's just motherfuckers who, like, I just talk to you right away, and I just know, yes, I want to talk to you forever. And April was that motherfucker. Dre was that motherfucker. And Alonzo was that motherfucker. And you guys are great, and I love you dearly. And thank you to Jesse Thorne for letting me come back here and do a show. And everybody who would, like, tweet at him and email him and say, hey, give Ricky a show, all you people. I you don't know how much that just makes me very happy. So thank you. And See, this is why I hate goodbyes, yo, because I don't like any of this.
The door, like the door is always open, you prick.
Yeah. When Coming to America 2 comes back out, I'd love to be here for that. Hello, my name is Dolomite. I'd love to be here for that.
Look at this little princess coming in. Kill him when he
pick
comes
dates
back.
On the calendar. Like, we're going to just throw it all
come
open.
Back for certain movies that I know I will love.
No, you're like Iron Man to me in Endgame.
Holy shit, no.
No.
Nice. Double callback.
Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Ya Pod. Our Facebook group is www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. You can send us an email at whoshotyamaximumfun.org. Somebody started some Facebook chain there, and you guys were all saying very lovely things. I try not to be on Facebook too much right now and Twitter, but when you guys write these things, you should know that that I see them. And I'm not responding right now, but I see them, and it just makes me very happy. You guys are really goddamn great. Really great. The Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Our producer is my man, Casey O'Brien, rocking the Minnesota Twins hat. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. She knows what's up. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. Everybody in this room.
And that's what's up.
Asoga!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.